When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
All right, welcome back to Stoke the Fire. As always, my brother, Matt Stocks, joining me. How you doing, Matt?
Top of the world, my friend. Top of the world. Thank you to everybody for the continued love and support and encouragement. It's unlike anything I've ever done or been involved with, this show. I imagine being in a band, you get a lot of this all the time, but this is special, and it feels like what we're doing on this show is different to, I don't want to say all of the podcasts, but certainly I feel like it's different to most. It's deeper than most.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, as much as I do get, you know, a good feeling and feedback from music, it is different. There's a depth to this that, you know, being able to connect with people one-on-one that is very different from music and performance. It's, you know, like a long extended meet and greet without the pretense. And I love it. I'm learning a lot from it. As I know we've talked about this, it's really changed my perspective, given me some purpose, and heard some incredible stories from not only just our guests, but from listeners as well who've written in to our Stoke the Fire email, which is stokethefirepod@gmail.com. And Matt goes through a lot of that. I got to get better at checking those messages. But Matt,
there's
really
so many as well. It's a full-time job keeping up with them, but do keep them coming. And not just like the stories, but some people just reach out to just say like, hey, I'm from, you know, we got one from Chile, I think, the other day. Yeah, Somebody saying how much they love the show down from, you know, South America. And yeah, it's just lovely hearing from you. So whatever you want to share, you know, whether it is your story or it's just some thoughts on an episode we've done, please do reach out and we do get back to everybody eventually.
Yeah. So yeah, so continuing on this great trajectory we've been on, we've had a lot of listeners on to tell their stories and to relate to them as well. So this episode is no different. We have another listener joining us today. Matt, you want to take it away?
Yeah, Eddie Therese, why don't you switch on your camera, pull up a chair, come sit by the fire with us, and we'll save all the details of your super interesting life for the show. What's up, dude? Welcome to Stoke the Fire.
What's up, fellas? Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, mate. I love the headset. Looks like you're going into war.
I'm a professional A40s. You know, these are the Twitch streaming headsets that everybody gets.
So do you do a lot of that? Are you a streamer?
No, I don't. My wife does, though. That's part of her job, her career. And she works for a video game company and they do live streams. So she hooked it up with these.
But you do host a podcast, right?
I do. I host the RRBG podcast. I've had good brother Jesse here on before, which was funny because I was looking at, I rewatched that episode and I remember telling you at like near the end, I'm like, you should have your own podcast. And boom, here it is.
little did we know. That's funny. Yeah, I remember the last time we talked, I believe it was backstage in, was it Arizona or Vegas? I don't remember. It's been a while, man. It's been a while. And a lot has transpired since then. And, you know, even just reading the message you sent to us, it just, you know, there's definitely some stuff to unpack with you, brother. It's deep. That's interesting stuff I didn't know. So good stuff, man. Nice to continue this conversation we've been having and go deep this time.
For sure. It's a conversation we've been having for years, man. And you know, it's always in little bits and pieces that behind, you know, backstage at shows, or we run into each other at a show, at another show, somebody else's show. Like we don't really have time. It's not something that I like to do either. It's, you know, the reason I reached out and I wanted to do this with you guys is because I love what you're doing. I love the idea of, you know, sitting by the fire and talking. And I found it as a challenge for myself because I don't like talking about myself. You know, it's such a crazy, you know, past. And I don't want to, when on my show specifically, like, I don't like to bring myself up. It's about the guest, right? You know, it's not about me. Nobody wants to hear about me. So You know, I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to just come on here and shoot the breeze with you.
Yeah, man. Well, why don't we start? You mentioned you grew up in like a, you know, an was it an organized crime family or just a family with a lot of crime going on?
Well, my grandfather and my father were both involved in organized crime, but not, they weren't like mafia leaders or anything like that. They weren't like part of any, they would interact with multiple different organizations. So predominantly the Italians in New Jersey was the main one. But I remember growing up and thinking this was just normal life, you know, like as a kid, I was like, this is what we have to do to make money. You know, seeing my grandfather who, you know, outside of business was always the sweetheart and you know, hey, my son, my grandson, hey, you know, and very caring. But then, you know, once I started developing consciousness and like being aware of what's going on, I'm like, oh, there's some stuff going on here that I'm not totally sure is the way normal people live their life.
What would have been some of your first, you know, inclinations that what was going on with your family was different to everybody else's and perhaps wasn't strictly legal?
I think it was one time my father came home with a stab wound. And I was like, hey, are you all right? And he's like, oh yeah, he made up some ridiculous story of like, oh, I got out of the car and I slipped and I hit my leg with the side of the door. And I'm like, that's a stab wound though. That's not a bruise. That's not a little scrape. Like you got stabbed. And, you know, we would have constant, like my grandfather and my dad would take me to like meet some of these people. And one of the things that was the first time I noticed that there was a problem. One of the Italian gentlemen was like, you know, if you have any trouble, you come see me and we'll take care of it. I'm like,
how old are you at that point, Eddie?
I was like 10, wow, 11. Okay. And then my father would put me to work. And I remember thinking, this is probably not something that my friends are doing. And I'd be in a basement somewhere cleaning. We would get lighter fluid and we would soak these medicine bottles with lighter fluid, and then I would remove stickers off of them. And I as a kid, I was like, I don't know what's going on, but he just wants me to do this, and I want to be with my dad, so why not? And you know, we would just sit there for hours removing these labels. And later I come to find out that what he was doing was paying gang members to rob pharmacies, and then he was reselling that medicine back to the pharmacies.
Wow.
So that was like his major, like that was just one of the things he was doing, but that was like his major moneymaker was organizing that. And just me in a basement, you know, inhaling toxic fumes of lighter fluid and whatnot, just removing labels. And it was pretty intense. It was pretty intense a lot of time.
So what was, so you mentioned in your email that, you had to be relocated. So when did it start to get bad? When did you see that, you know, this lifestyle was catching up potentially with what your dad was doing?
Yeah. I mean, we were moving every year. It was pretty intense. Like it wasn't like state moves. We were moving from town to town in New Jersey, you know, from North Bergen to Weehawken to Hoboken to, you know, we were just going around. And I always just thought maybe it was because my family was poor, because they're all, you know, immigrants from Cuba, and my grandfather's from Spain, and I just thought that was just part of the deal, being immigrants. But it was part of the deal from being in organized crime. So,
do you have brothers or sisters, dude? Were you any child?
I do have a brother and a sister, but they are from different father, and it was like after all of this craziness. Like okay. It was, yeah. It was they're half siblings. But the day that became a real problem was when we moved from New Jersey to Miami. It was when my father got arrested, when he got caught, finally. We were out to dinner. I remember at this point, my parents had divorced, and which was another traumatic event that kind of, you know, as I'm getting older now in my late 30s, I'm realizing that really damaged a lot of my psyche. As a kid, I didn't really think much of it, but now it's like, oh. Well, there was a lot of violent encounters. Like my parents would fight, like fist fight and blood. And my mom would throw stuff off the balcony and smash it into his car, that, you know, that kind of violence. And one day, you know, they finally split up, and we would take, you know, I would take turns staying with them. I would either go to my dad's house, and that's where my drinking problem started, because I would go to his house and he had a bar and I would just drink. It's not really a problem. I don't think I have a drinking problem, but anyway,
age did you start boozing?
13, 14, I think it was. I think it was 13 when I would stay with him and break into his booze stash. And on top of that, you know, even before that, I think it wasn't like I started boozing, but when I was like 8 years old, he would host these underground domino games, and all the gangsters would come out to this domino game, and he would pay me money to come out and bring them beers. So I would bring them Heinekens, and I would just I'm 8 years old, like with a little tray with beers, and these dudes would just give me $100 bill, you know, as a tip, just because, you know, whatever. And I do remember at one point my father's like, "You want to try this beer?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And I hated it, which is one of the reasons I it took me a long time to get into beer. But I did like liquor because it was sweeter. You know, you could mix it with soda or whatever, it just tasted sweeter than beer. But anyway, one of those nights that I was staying with my dad, we went out to dinner and he got arrested. Like, there was dudes came in. It was the FBI. It wasn't even police.
Wow.
And, you know, to arrest him, took him away. I got, you know, I had to call my mom and she picked me up. And then once that happened, my whole family just kind of like, we have to get out of here. We have to go to Miami. We have to leave New Jersey, because it was a matter of time before they caught my grandfather. You know what I mean? Because he was the main honcho. He's passed away now, so I can talk about all this and I feel comfortable about it. But he was the main guy. And then once my dad got arrested, my grandfather was like, "We're all leaving right now." And he bought this mansion, and not a mansion, but like a 7-bedroom house in Miami. And the entire family just moved in together to this house to kind of flee. So that's when it became a real, like, that was the last big move we had from that situation. And then the family ended up going back to New Jersey a couple years after that, but I decided to stay. I was already 18 and I had a girlfriend, I had a band, I had like, had a life, and I was like, "You know what, guys, go. I want out of the business. Yeah, I can't do this anymore." So yeah, that was pretty much it.
How was that met, that news that you were done with the family business? Were you made to feel gone?
No, they definitely didn't. They were not happy with that. My grandfather disowned me because I had a mohawk, and you're officially a degenerate now. Like, you're not part of the family, because you don't want to be a part of it. You want to be on your own, and you got these, you know, you got a mohawk and you got a tattoo, and they all left, and they just, I mean, that's how it was met. They all left me there. That's the other thing. Like, if you think about it, if they really wanted me to go, I would have been forced to go, but they were just like, "Nah, all right, bye, stay then." And I think honestly, that's the best move I could have done, is just leave. Because if I would have stayed, my life would have been, I mean, as it is, it took many, many years for me to become a normal functioning member of society after all that. You know?
Yeah, inevitably, you'd probably be pulled into the family business full time. That's usually how that works.
Yeah.
You know? As much as, you know, and I grew up around the periphery of a mob lifestyle as well. Thankfully, in my immediate family, it wasn't there. But in my extended family, I saw some of that as well. And, you know, I saw another side to it. I saw some glamorous stuff as well. Thankfully, I was protected from it. But yeah, I can only imagine, you know, especially being a young man, like how that shapes you and how that affects the way you see the world, and, you know, a life of crime versus a quote unquote normal life. Sometimes that making that adjustment is hard, because you get pulled into like, "Oh, I can make money easy doing this particular thing," whatever. So how do you think that shaped the way that, you know, moving forward in your life, the way you saw the world?
Well, dude, I mean, I ended up, you know, getting arrested. I didn't know any better. You know, there's other, like, obviously there's intricacies to everything that happened in those formative years. Like, moments like when my parents were arguing and getting a divorce, like, my mom stole his safe, and then, like, she made me break into the safe as we were driving to the beach. She was like, here's the safe, open it up. And I'm in the back seat with a crowbar trying to crank open the safe. And I'm like, this is my life. And but, you know, after all that, when I stayed in Miami, I got a job working at a store. It was a retail store. I'm not going to say the name, but it was a retail store. And I ended up making my way up to like sort of management. It was like, you're not really a manager, but you got a key to the place and you got to handle inventory and that kind of thing. And when they handed me the keys and the inventory, something clicked in my brain where I was like, oh, I can make money off of this. Something like that crime took
immediately,
over.
Just straight away. Yeah.
The second they gave me the key, I'm like, oh, and then I started I became kind of like a mobster because it was part of this store was in a mall, and I started forming deals with people. Like, I'm going to go to the cell phone shop. Like, hey man, come to my store, whatever you want, anything you need, I got you. And then we would do trades. Like, they'd bring me brand new cell phones. I'm like, all right, go ahead, do whatever you need to do. I'll adjust the inventory. I'll turn off the cameras, blah, 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 you know? And, eventually I ended up letting someone into what I was doing. One of my coworkers that I trusted, I was like, yeah, man, you know, I'm doing this. If you want to do it, you know, just run it by me because I know how I'm doing it. And he ended up messing up and they ended up figuring it out and bringing in secret shoppers and catching everything on camera. And, you know, eventually I walk in one day to work and my boss is just like freaking out. And I go to the back and there's police officers with a TV set up with footage of me doing stuff. And they're like, what's going on there? And I'm like, I don't know. That's not me. You know, like my initial, like my family kind of like training kind of took over with like, yeah, no, that's not me. I don't know who that is. And then, it, you know, they were like, it's obviously you. So we're just going to do this. And I got arrested. And that was the beginning of the downfall, because even though everything beforehand was kind of shitty, this was the beginning of like my life going to shit completely.
Were you represented or supported by the family when you get arrested, or are you on your own at that stage?
I'm on my own completely. I called my mother, told her what happened, and they got the money to bail me out, but that was pretty much it. At the time, my girlfriend that I had, she was the one that had to pick me up and you know, take care of me after that. And, you know, little by little, things just started getting worse, and that's when I started learning about karma, learning about how that, you know, all of this stuff that I'm doing is bad and everything that I grew up with is bad. And I need to fix this because it's not going to get any better. And instead of actually fixing it, I actually took a turn and went the wrong way and started abusing drugs. And, you know, there was a lot that happened shortly after that kind of taught me hard lessons of karma.
Did you go to jail? Did you serve time?
I didn't serve a lot. I was there for about 2 days.
Right.
And then they bailed me out. And it was not great, you know, because I, in my mind, I'm just a kid. Like, I was just, I'm not doing anything bad. I kept justifying it. Like, I'm stealing from a corporation. Like, this is nothing, you know, like, I'm not stealing from people. You know, why am I in here with this guy who I was, one of the gentlemen that I was in the cell with, you know, was just, he was like, oh, I had a party and I was taking a shower and the cops came in and took me away. And then I started like digging to see what more details. And, you know, he was selling drugs to minors and then like having sex parties with minors. I'm like, that's not me. I'm not doing that. Like, please don't put me in here with him. So that was definitely the beginning of trying, like realizing like, oh man, I'm messing up real bad, you know?
So when did drugs come into play shortly thereafter? And then I guess what was your sort of gateway into the drug world, into, I'm assuming, escaping or numbing whatever was going on in your mind? And how did that transition happen?
So it started in, you know, obviously with the drinking and whatnot, but weed was kind of my first thing I smoked, some weed in high school and whatnot. But shortly after... So there's a little kind of a segue that leads to that. It's that once my father got out of prison, he was gone for about 8 years. And when he came out, I reached out. And I was like, hey, I'd love to reconnect with you because over the last 8 years, my mother has been kind of poisoning me against you. just telling me all these horror stories about you and how you're the worst person ever. So I'd like to get to know you and as an adult and see your side of the story. So I moved in with him and where he was, you know, he had a house, he was under house arrest. He had the little beeper on his ankle and everything. So I moved in with him and spent some time with him just trying to get to know him. We started developing a business together. He was doing like truck transportation. So I was helping him out with that. And something happened where he met a girl and she convinced him that I was poisoning him against her. And I wasn't at all. I didn't even care. I was like, yeah, man, get you some. But she was kind of having this jealousy in her head, thinking that I was like a spy for my mother or something. And she convinced him that I was this like spy or I was poisoning. And he kicked me out. He kicked me out to the street. And I didn't have anything at that point now. Like I had given up everything I had. I had already been arrested. I had a car accident, which, you know, I was dead during this car accident. All of this stuff had happened. So I had nothing. And when he kicked me out, I became homeless and I went straight to Miami Beach because I was like, whatever, I could just kind of chill on the beach maybe and figure something out. Maybe I'll get a job. And that's when I met some people and they were just like, oh, come hang out with us. And like, hey, man, we're doing a little bit of coke. And I'm like, I've never done coke. And they're like, all right. Yeah, sure. Let's try it. And I tried coke and then coke became speed and speed became LSD and meth and whatever you can get your hands on at that point. Cause I was like, what am I doing? I have nothing else. And it was, you know, every night. It wasn't just maybe once a week. It was every night, something MDMA, some ecstasy, whatever, party. Cause the way I saw it was I was continuing to have shelter. Like I was, if I can stay with these people and party with them and like, oh, we'll go to this party and go to that party. And, oh, we're going to crash in this guy's house for a little bit. We'll just chill on the couch and just kind of do that until eventually I ended up ODing on coke and I woke up in the hospital. Like I didn't know what had happened. I woke up and I'm like, what happened? They're like, I don't know. We found you. You apparently had an OD of cocaine. And I'm like, really? Cause I was in my mind. I'm like, I'm not doing that much. It was just every day. So
just casually all the time,
just casual, you know, just casual cocaine usage.
How old are you at this point, dude? Just to keep the time frame.
Yeah, 20s, 21, 22, 23, around that time period.
And you're essentially homeless at this point, right? It sounds like if you're just looking for places to stay, you didn't really have a home, correct?
Yeah, completely homeless. There were nights where I woke up, you know, I woke up once at a Dunkin' Donuts. And I woke up and just kind of looked around and I saw that I was surrounded by like four or five other homeless people and they looked homeless. That was one thing, like while I was homeless, I tried to maintain the appearance of normal, of being a normal person. Like I would take showers in like Walgreens, you know, the tour life, like the, you know, shower in the sink, yep. And get some baby wipes. And, you know, I tried to stay clean. But when I woke up at that Dunkin' Donuts and I saw that I was surrounded by dudes covered in mud and like piss and just, you know, bad, it was really kind of a shocking, like, oh my god, what is happening with me? Like I gotta do something. And that's when music saved my life. I found a band and they kind of dragged me out of that lifestyle. And, you know, I moved in with the band and started doing music and gave me purpose, I guess.
So when you overdose, was that your last, were you done with it or were you still having issues with it?
Well, I was done with cocaine. Hmm. I stopped doing like super heavy drugs, but shortly after that, that's when I discovered psychedelics. And I also started digging into my spirituality aspect of, because throughout all of the stuff that was happening, there was a lot of supernatural stuff that happened as well. My mother was a santera, which is voodoo, I guess, from Cuba. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a whole other traumatizing experience of just seeing really weird things around the house, like live chickens, you know, being killed and they rub the heart on you, on your face, and like all kinds of crazy. Like I brought a friend over once when I was a little kid, and the second I opened the door, I'm telling this kid like, hey, come on in. I got this Nintendo game. We're gonna go play this Nintendo game. And I opened the door. My mom opens the door, blowing cigar smoke and hitting me with a palm frond, just kind of like smacking me. And I'm like, what's happening? And then she just spits this like water at me. I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I'm just cleansing you. And my friend just ran away. Like, this, I want nothing to do with this. Goodbye. But, you know, once I started kind of questioning the nature of my existence because of all the stuff that had been happening and all of the supernatural
things. Was Catholicism looming large from the Italian side of the family as well?
Oh, yeah. So I was up until seventh grade, I was in private school as well. And which is, you know, right before we fled from New Jersey. But, you know, I had a lot it was rough. Like, they would hit us with rulers. Like, it was, you know, very intense. I couldn't listen to any kind of music. The most exciting music I was listening to was the Bee Gees. You know, like, it was crazy. But I got kicked out of that school because they thought I was possessed. I had an incident where they asked a question about something, and I kind of just burst into this maniacal laughter, and I couldn't stop laughing. I was on the floor, like, literally holding myself, laughing and crying, and they were like, "Oh, he's possessed." And they called my mother, and they you know, they kicked me out. They suggested an exorcism. She never did it, thankfully. But it was kind of it was interesting for her to just be like, "Yeah, no, we give up on you. You're done. You're possessed by the demon. Like, we can't fix you."
Wow. Yeah, because God is love, right? Rejection.
Yeah, God.
I can relate. I did the private school up until seventh grade myself. I didn't get kicked out because I was a good little doobie, but definitely indoctrinated and definitely you know, raised in a very religious house. So you mentioned psychedelics, and then that segued you into talking about existence. Can you talk about that relationship with the psychedelics in the spiritual world? Like, when did that sort of start to manifest itself in your brain and your wanting to seek the deeper things and question your existence?
Yeah. So around like the age of 12, I had my first, what I've learned to be, you know, what I learned later that it was my first OBE, my first out-of-body experience. And it was kind of just this, it felt like a dream, but it felt real and very lucid, and I could smell and taste and touch things, but I was kind of, it was obviously very surreal. I was in a situation where I found this flower in my front lawn, and every time I touched the flower, it would change colors and it would affect the world around me. So like, I touched it and it turned red and a volcano came out of the ground. And so I knew it wasn't like reality. It was something else. So that was the first time I had something crazy like that happen. And then when I had my car accident, which was very, you know, as a scientifically, medically, I was dead. So I do remember seeing something while I was out, and that thing that I saw, I ended up discovering was the seed of life from sacred geometry. The first thing I did actually when I got back from the accident was get that tattooed on my arm, because I was like, I don't know what that is, I don't know what it is, but I don't want to forget it. And I got it tattooed, and then later I discovered it was the seed of life, and I discovered about, you know, sacred geometry and all that. And then as I started experimenting with mushrooms and LSD, all that world kind of started flourishing, where I'm like, okay, well, there's something else going on. There's multiple layers to this. It's not just existing here physically. There's also different existences in parallel dimensions. There's, I started having OBEs more regularly, more frequently, sorry. I went and took a trip to Peru and to Machu Picchu, to the ruins out there.
That's one of my top three places I want to go. Is it amazing?
So it's a good journey. I went in with this mentality of like, I'm going to go and I'm going to immediately get blown away, right? Like that, I thought like, I'm going to go there and it's going to change my entire life. I'm going to learn everything about spirituality. And I didn't. And at the moment when I finally reached the ruins, it was kind of disappointing. Like I sat up there and I was kind of like, this place is empty. All of the spirits that were here are gone. Like, now it's tourists. There's just tourists everywhere. But over the years, reflecting back on that journey, I realized that it wasn't about getting there and finding that holy grail. It was the developing kind of persistence and this kind of drive to better myself. It's a journey. The fact that I was able to make it, you know, through the Inca Trail for 3 days and survive that entire journey with little to no resources. I kind of didn't do any research. I didn't bring enough equipment. I didn't bring enough money. I ended up, there was a point during that journey where on the, I think it was like the third day of the hike, we were at a peak where it was snowing. And I kind of, my body gave out. We had no food, no water. So I was just kind of sitting there up against the wall of the mountain. And the trail itself is only like 3-4 feet. And I remember just looking over the edge. I'm like, if I fall, it's over. And, but I don't have it. I can't move my legs anymore. So we just kind of, it was me and my buddy that was doing it with me. We just kind of sat back and gave up. I was like, I'm just going to take a nap and maybe I'll wake up. Maybe I don't. Maybe this is part of the journey. Who knows? And I ended up falling asleep and getting woken up by these French hikers. And they kind of just, whoa, hey, come on, get up, get up. And they started giving us bread and cheese and water and kind of like got us back up. But, you know, this trail, you see dead bodies. You see bones laying around. And like I had just surrendered to that. I was like, well, this is it. This is where I go. So I think all of that just kind of helped build me up to kind of help me grow past my past self, you know, this criminal kind of homeless, you know, drug addict kind of thing, out of that into a normal kind of, you know, flourishing human being.
It's amazing, dude. Amazing, amazing stuff. What when you had the car accident and you said you're like technically dead, something changes in you when you go through something like that, doesn't it? What changed in you after that experience? Was that when the heightened awareness of a bigger picture came into play? I guess you truly realized the fragility and the beauty of life as well. What was the sort of your immediate thought processes going forward from that moment on?
Yeah, it was interesting. I knew that what I saw, what I was under, was important. I don't know what it was. I didn't immediately say, oh, that's God, or that's the source, or that's, you know, the universe. It was just something I saw. And it became an obsession to kind of figure out what that was, and to figure out what else I had seen that maybe I couldn't remember because I was knocked out.
But, do you think that might have been a message to you? Is that how you take it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the initial message from the universe or whatever to get my shit together and to kind of discover my purpose in life and what I'm supposed to be doing. Because what I had been doing up to that point was not working. Like that accident happened like right after my arrest. Like after I got out of the arrest, that accident happened. It's just kind of the timing was too much, you know? And after that accident is when I went to Peru to figure out. I met some really great people out there. Some interesting. Like I have some books that were given to me from Freemasons. That, you know, we've heard many stories of these occult Freemasons that study the nature of the universe. So I was kind of like, all right, let me look into that. I met a few of them. They gave me some books. They actually wanted me to join, but I couldn't commit to something like that. The lifestyle that they had. But that accident, seeing that image in my head and knowing that I was dead and I was disconnected from my body consciously and made it back, just kind of made me, it became an obsession. And that's why psychedelics became a thing, because I was like, I need to find out more. And these psychedelics are kind of opening these doors for me. It's making me understand that there's so much more that we're not aware of physically.
So you found that experimenting with them, using them, helped you gain a deeper appreciation and understanding of the human condition, human existence, yeah. All that stuff.
For sure. Yeah. It helped me understand. I started explaining it to people is that while we're here talking to each other and in person with each other, or like, you know, the concept of the show, sitting around a fire talking, that is a radio station, the way I see it. Like we're listening to 106.5, whatever it may be. And we are able to change that radio station subconsciously or with our consciousness, which is how I explain dreams. You know, once you're having these very lucid, very vivid dreams, it's basically you changing the radio station and not actually, you know, if you get an old school analog radio and you're kind of like, say you're trying to get to 106.5, at about 106.3, you're going to start hearing 106.5. It's just going to have static and kind of blurry. That's how I see dreams. Like, we're not there. I'm not at the station, but I'm like on my way to that station. And I think we can get to that station if we focus with, you know, meditation and breathing techniques and all kinds of other, taking care of your body, making sure you're clean and healthy and using yourself to get to that point.
Yeah. And I think psychedelics.
What a cool analogy, right?
Yeah. That's a great analogy. Yeah. I love that the station being sort of tuned in. I could hear it as you were saying it too. Yeah, I find that interesting too about psychedelics in my own life is it really does sort of peel back the layers and remind you of, you know, how profound life really is. And oftentimes, you know, the profundity of it is really simple, isn't it? It's simple and profound. And I think that often gets overlooked in people's everyday life. We tend to overanalyze all these things. And, you know, I like that you mentioned clean living and meditation. That's also very important. But, you know, for anyone who hasn't tried psychedelics, they can be used as a tool for spirituality, a tool to, and even, you know, there, I know some people have just done it once and they're like, wow, that's good. I saw what I saw and I'm good. And it changed them. Some people continue to seek, you know, and I think that that's important to note. It, you know, psychedelics don't have to be, you don't have to go down this journey and continue to do them. Sometimes it's just that one time and you tune in, but I totally believe in the power of that. And it's changed my life too, you know, deeper than anything, because it's your own personal journey, right? Like I think that opens the eye of perception, or your third eye, as they call it, your pineal gland. And when that gets tapped into, you kind of can't go back from that point, right? It just, everything has flipped on you and you see the world through different eyes. And I love that about psychedelics and about having that mindset, you know, pushing forward and coming out of your past life, seeking for that new one, you know?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a struggle too with other people. Like, one of the challenges I discovered after all this time is being able to connect with other human beings and kind of be empathetic of their situation and not try to not come off douchey. You know what I mean? Because a lot of yogi kind of like meditation guys, they come off douchey because you there's an element of it that makes you feel better than, like, you're like, oh, I've graduated. I now know my purpose in life, and anything you say isn't going to change me. Like that kind of mentality is a struggle, because
come across as condescending, can't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I love that you said it's like a tool. It is. I think psychedelics can be a very good tool, like a crutch to get you. You know, if you break your leg and you still need to get somewhere, you use a crutch. It's kind of the same idea. You can get there. You can get to discovering the true nature of existence on your own using breathing techniques and meditation, like you said, clean eating and all that. But this is like a helpful tool. And you see it throughout history and religions. And you look at like old pictures or drawings of Egyptians. They all had tools. The Ankh of Life, to me, the Ankh of Life represents that tool that leads you to spirituality. Catholics and Christians and all that, they have their own. They have the, you know, the cross, the book, the Bible, that, you know, all the different tools that they use to engage in their religion. Same with Santeria. They have their, you know, the chicken egg and the little cup with the, I don't even know what that is. They have a cup with water and like a little cube inside. So everyone has their own tools and crutches that helps them achieve some kind of spirituality. And I think psychedelics can be that for people that don't have a religion, people that are just kind of exploring and trying to figure out what life is.
Well, I mean, our ancestors, you mentioned the Egyptians had the psychedelic flower in their artwork and, you know, psychedelics have been used since the dawn of humankind, and it's something that gets buried. And, you know, there's a lot to be gained to keep us, you know, unenlightened and sort of dull, you know, we're easier to control, but you know, if you really look back, all of our ancestors, doesn't matter where you come from, in one way, shape, or form, psychedelics do come into play. You've got medicine men, you know, you've got shamans, tribal leaders, you know, certain monks talk about having an experience. And like you mentioned, meditation, you can do it through meditation as well. But, you know, I think that that's just an important part of the journey of a person. You choose, you make decisions, and then you follow the path. And I think people who go through trauma and go through hard times, I feel like psychedelics are a way to bridge the gap, you know, of your pain and your scars and your suffering. And you find the meaning of, you know, maybe the reason why you think you may have suffered. I think finding the meaning behind your life and what you've struggled through, when you find understanding of like, I had to go through this for my perception to change. And with me in my life, I've found that through psychedelics and meditation, understanding why I went through the shit that I went through to make me who I am today and to potentially help others down that same path. So we've been talking about your life and talking about finding your purpose. Do you feel like you are still discovering your purpose? Where are you at these days with your life?
I'm definitely happier and more fulfilled than I've ever been. And it's a lot to do with trying to live a good life, you know, trying to take those moments where that I mentioned earlier, when I got the keys to the place and I immediately switched to how can I turn this into business? I've tried to manipulate that into a positive way so that I can live I know that it's very punk rock to think I don't live by the rules. Like, I don't want to live by the rules. Like, you have to kind of adhere to certain rules in order to have a normal life, or also just end up homeless and drug addict again. Like, that's how I see it. So I have to kind of not break the law so I don't end up in jail. So when I get these situations presented to me, that thing still happens in my brain. It goes off, but I try and see how I can make it positive, and how can I make money so I can have a living, but in a positive way that's going to positively affect other people and have a positive impact in my own life. And right now I definitely feel I'm still looking. Obviously, I think if you feel completely at peace with yourself in terms of, I think I'm done, like I've done everything or whatever, it doesn't feel right. Like, to me, that you should always have hunger to learn more, to be better. You can always be better. So I still feel that I'm still trying to be better and still trying to grow and be find my goal. But with the journey of the podcast that I've had, meeting all these people and listening to their stories as well, and sharing and connecting, I'm pretty happy at this point in my life, because I've always been a big fan of just communicating with people. It's always been like my forte, is just like, hey, let's hang out, let's socialize, let's talk, let's have a party. Like, I have always enjoyed that. So I feel like I'm fulfilling a major part of my life now using the podcast. I do feel that there's more to grow from that as well. But
tell our listeners the name of your podcast, just so you can reference.
Oh, the podcast is the RRBG podcast. I've had, like I said, Jesse on. I've been honored to have some incredible musical legends, like people from Motorhead and Nine Inch Nails. And I've kind of been branching out because I don't want it to just be music. I'm talking to actors and comedians and artists and authors. And I had my first politician on not too long ago, which I don't like politics, but he's one politician that's actually fighting for the legalization of psychedelics. So I was like, yeah, let's talk. Yeah. But you know, I've also one other aspect of my life that was affected by the drugs and the homelessness and being in a band and all that was me and my romantic life. And I used to meet tons of women and it was never healthy. It wasn't a healthy relationship. I would have other relationships with people that were just abusive or whatever. And now I'm married and I've never been happier. So that's good. So I feel I'm doing something right in that area. I'm doing something right with the podcast. I just, you know, there's always room to grow, but I feel that I've achieved a lot of the things I've set my mind to. And what's important to take from that message is, like, I'm not trying to just show off, like, oh, look at me, I'm great. Like, no, like all of that shit that I had to crawl through broken glass and fire to get to, like, you can do it. Like, you know, it's not a lot of people that can say, like, oh, I died. I was gone. I was arrested. I came back from homelessness and drug abuse to have a normal life, to where I have my own place with my wife. And, you know, I have the job that I wanted, and I'm pursuing a career that I want to pursue. Like, a lot of times I get, like, even my own family, my little sister hits me up sometimes. She's like, life sucks. I'm like, yeah, but you can fix it. get to work. Like, it's not going to fix itself, you know?
What's really cool for me, the main take I got from what you just said, is that that thing in your brain never goes away. So there's no easy cure. There's no easy solution. It's not like you're just fixed. You know, the work is continuing and will always continue, but you can, if you have the right tools and you want to put in the time, you can change that feeling into something positive, as you say. That's the most inspiring thing for me, that, you know, those things that we go through completely, they don't hold us back or like completely box us in, but they do define us, and it's up to us, isn't it, as to how we put it to use. And that's killer, man. And do you have contact with either of your parents? Do you have any kind of a relationship with your mum or your dad?
I do, and I struggle with being hateful, because it's kind of, you know, I see, like, my father, for example, you know, I try and stay in touch with him. We communicate over, like, WhatsApp and Telegram and whatever, because he lives out in Mexico now. He had to flee the country because he's not allowed back in. So he's out there living his dream, and I kind of, you know, every once in a while I'll message him, like, you all right? Are you alive? How's your health? You know, I just want to check in. But I struggle with this in my head of, like, I don't even, why should I care? He didn't care. He kicked me to the curb because he thought I was a spy, you know, like, and then my mother in the same vein, like, I stay in touch with her every once in a while, but she's relentless. Like, she's got mental illness that I can't help, you know? And every time I've gone to her to help her, it's a refusal. It's like, you're a kid. You don't know anything. Leave me alone. And I'm just like, no, you've got problems. Like, what's the word I'm looking for when you lie consistent, like a
compulsive liar.
Yeah, she's a compulsive liar, and she has these delusions in her head of these, like, she still thinks my dad and her are going to end up together. I'm like, you've been divorced for 20 something years. So, but, you know, a lot of her choices led to me having a difficult time growing up as well. So I have that resentment in my head of, like, whatever, like, I, you know.
Which is draining, isn't it? It's exhausting carrying around that blame. And resentment, as you say, like, it's about, you know, not forgetting, but forgiving is a very hard thing to do, isn't it? But when you're able to do it, I think you do find a greater inner peace.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, because
yeah, I mean, there's, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was gonna say, yeah, I hear you, because I've, you know, whenever I do reach out and talk to her, I feel relief. It's not tension, you know. When I'm not talking to her and she's messaging me with her madness, like, I get stressed out. I'm just like, oh my God, like, just leave me alone. And then when I finally kind of, like, take a moment, like, let me talk to her, let me give her a call, that moment in time ends up being peaceful, you know, until the next batch of crazy hits.
It's, well, that's it. Sometimes forgiveness is, you know, sometimes it's for yourself as well. Cause, you know, holding on to anger, you know, it manifests itself physically inside you, and it's a toxic, I mean, legitimately like a toxicity to the body. So, you know, finding forgiveness for somebody who's, you know, in your past, a lot of the times it's for your inner peace, and, you know, you call it selfish, if you will, but, you know, you kind of have to get to that point where, in order for you to move forward, you have to reconcile with the past, and you have to find a place to put your feet down to take that next step forward. And I think that's great. It's nice to hear that you're on that path. And I got to ask you, talking about, like, purpose and moving forward, I feel like as we get older, right, we go through all these things in our lives, and then we have these awakenings, these moments. And I feel like as we get older, that's when you start to turn around and you see that you've got to give people a bit of your journey, give people a bit of your wisdom that you've earned, you know, through life, and you turn around, you help other people. Do you feel like with your podcast and where you're sort of your trajectory now is, you know, telling your story could potentially empower other people? And you kind of hinted at it earlier, like, if I've gotten through this, you can get through this, because there are people that have it worse than you and people who probably don't have it as bad as you did. So to me, in my life and what I've got through this podcast and working with Matt is, like, I feel like a really deeper sense of fulfillment and purpose, because I'm able to take my experiences and the experience of other people like yourself and share that story. And there's real power in that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's definitely one of the things that appealed to me most about podcasting in general. It's what got me into watching other people's podcasts, is being able to hear their stories. And I mentioned earlier, I try not to bring myself up too much in my podcast because I want to talk about the guest. But yeah, absolutely, you know, dropping in little anecdotes to kind of like, hey, I sympathize or I empathize, I get you, and, you know, I had a similar experience. That's a conversation that we are lacking in society. You know, if you, everything that's kind of going on now, when you see what's happening in the world, it's more division and less conversations. It's more, I'm right, you're wrong, back and forth. And instead
you're
of
blocked.
Having
the, don't want to talk to you anymore. Out of my life. Yeah.
I'm blocking you. Oh, you voted for this guy? Bye. Like, that's not a conversation, man. Like, I get tons of people hit me up too with, you know, why are you still friends with him? Like, because we're friends. Because we've been able to have conversations, and I don't agree with what he's saying, but, you know, he's nice to me. We have conversations. I understand him or her.
That's what we say all the time on this podcast is we have more in common than we do differences. And if you really go down to brass tacks of us as humans, our connection, there's so much more connectivity than there is division. We just get the division heightened through social media, through mainstream media. And that's totally what we're going through right now and to a peak level. And it's frustrating, but it's also, it empowers you, I would hope, you know, as it has for me, to like try to push more unity and try to push more discussion and commonality between all of us.
Yeah. And I gotta give you props, man. Cause ever since I discovered your music, the message within the lyrics was very positive, very, hey, I've struggled, but you know, there's a journey here. And that was my initial attraction to the band Killswitch. Like, that was just this perseverance and this kind of like, you've been struggling, but together we can, you know, fix this problem. And, you know, when you started the podcast, immediately I was like, yes, perfect. This is exactly what I wanted. This is what, you know, what people need. More people need to be doing that. I don't think there's an oversaturation issue, because you hear that too a lot. Like, oh, everybody's got a podcast. Like, yeah, but that's good. You know, you can filter out the ones you find boring or you don't want to listen to. But it's good that there's more of this happening, more conversations. And while social media is kind of being a problem and hurting people with dopamine hits and whatnot, and all this flood of information and oversensing, overloading your senses, it also is a very powerful tool, because you can do this, like we have this conversation now.
Yeah, totally. I love it, man.
Dude, you're a kindred spirit. You're one of us.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. And I appreciate you letting me come on here and talk. It's like I said, I don't really ever talk much about it. And it, as I'm getting older, this is therapy, because that's another thing psychedelics kind of did to me, was I feel that I can't go to a therapist. I feel that they're not going to help. And I know that that's kind of childish probably, you know, but I feel that I have an understanding of how my brain works. Like, I know why I'm stressed and why I'm anxious and why I'm depressed. It's because of all of this stuff that I grew up with. And psychedelics helped me figure that out. You know, mushrooms can be like therapy. So I always struggle with that. Like, when I'm anxious, like, should I go talk to somebody? Should I have a therapist? Like, everybody in Hollywood has a therapist, so why not? But
have you ever tried it?
I've tried it when I was a kid. When my parents first got divorced, I got kind of forced into it.
Yeah.
But as an adult,
maybe
I've
just
never
worth
tried it.
Trying, man. I think anything like that that's positive and can only have, you know, either no outcome or a positive, it's definitely worth a try. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does, you might open a whole other side to yourself. And then you've got, you know, your experience and everything that you've learned, the wisdom you gain from the psychedelic stuff. Then that added to it, you know, you'd be an unstoppable force, dude. And the podcasting thing as well, man. Like, I'm on the same page with you there. This is my therapy. You know, every session we do on this show, I do on my show, it all feeds into like working through my shit in real time.
Yeah. I think the important thing for people that are watching this is just, life is very, very difficult, but there is a way out of it. And these conversations, talking to each other and communicating is the best way to do it, I think.
Yeah, we have a lot to learn from each other, really. I mean, the more conversations I have with people, as Matt was saying, the more I learn about myself as well as other people's experiences. And it does give you a bit of, a courage to push forward when you hear somebody's story. You know, we've heard some extraordinary stories on this podcast, including, you know, yours. It's great to be able to take all that and sort of gather it in amongst your own experience and compare and contrast, and I'm nothing but motivated. And when I get off of these conversations, it may take me a few hours or days to really sort of, you know, let it all register. But I'm always leaving with a sense of like, wow, I need more of that. This is the stuff of life, isn't it? And we talk about, you know, there's a reason why this podcast is called Stoke the Fire. And you mentioned at the top of this, like gathering around that fire, that sense of community that you get. And to me, that's, I've found my home here. I've found my home with music and lyrics. I've always tried to inspire and pull people out of themselves in that live music environment. But to get one-on-one or two-on-one and get really personal, I feel like I've gained so much wisdom because of that. So you sharing your story, people we've had on, it just all continues to help me grow as a human. And thankfully, in time, continue, you know, that purpose-filled life of helping others to see that they have strength within themselves to continue to change their own lives.
Yeah, man. Yeah, one question I wanted to ask you, because since you've explored psychedelics and whatnot, and what are your, where are you right now with facing death? Because I feel sometimes I struggle when talking to other people, like, oh, they're panicking about the pandemic and whatnot. I panicked a little bit, but at the end of the day, since I've kind of felt like I've been there and I know what's coming after we pass, I don't have that fear, and I have a hard time empathizing with or trying to explain that to people. Like, you shouldn't fear death. No. There's more to it. Where are you in that part of the
journey? Yeah, I've always sort of held a strong hope for death just being a doorway. You know, I was raised to believe in heaven and hell. And I've since, I think, have decided to sort of grow past that, you know, and number one, realize that none of us have the 100% truth or answer. None of us know truly what happens. But through my use of psychedelics and through my use of meditation and just discovering things through reading and through moving through the world as an open mind, and deprogramming myself from organized religion, I've always carried a, how do I word this? I to me, fearing death is not, it's not even an option in my mind anymore. And, you know, during this whole past year or so, I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just being very honest because it's something I really haven't said much at all. Not once did I panic. Not once did I feel fear when it came to me and my mortality. I'm ready to die. I've lived an incredible life. I've accomplished more goals than I ever set out to do. But also, I don't think death is the end. I don't. I believe it with all of my heart. And again, that's a belief. Nobody knows. But I carry that feeling in the gut of my soul that this is just the chapter and many chapters to come. And I think if I do harbor any sort of fear of death, it's losing loved ones and how to deal with that loss, because I've got people, I don't know what I would do without them. And I think sometimes in my life, I've pressed forward to live more because of other people, not wanting them to feel pain. But I can honestly say without a shadow of a doubt, if I were to die after this podcast, I'm ready. I'm ready to go, and I don't fear it. And I don't say that to brag. I just, that's truly how I feel.
How about you, Matt?
I nearly died too, and I'm sure Jesse and I will do a podcast around that because that's a whole other conversation. But I broke my back and fell on some train tracks, and yeah, I nearly died 8 years ago now. And ever since then, I've just felt like I'm not afraid to die. I just don't want to.
Yeah.
And that's like that's really where I'm at. Like, there was a time when I was so depressed I wanted to take myself out, but it was the harm that would cause my family that stopped me from doing it. But now I'm in a really great place, and I want to be here for as long as possible because I'm really enjoying life. But I have, in the same breath as what Jesse said there, I have zero fear for my safety in any situation. And that's not reckless. That's not like, look at me, I'm a hard man, I've got no fear. Like, I'm just not afraid to die because I have an unshakable belief that there's a whole other existence and another one after that and another one after that. I believe it's just one ongoing trip. And so, yeah, there's no fear for me either. As I said, I'm just not ready yet, which is great. Yeah.
I like that. I like that. I'm not ready either. I got a whole bunch of living to do if I can, for sure. But, you know, We'll see what happens in life, right, my man?
For sure, man. I mean, I've struggled with this too. Sometimes I get up in the morning, I'm like, man, I'm so old. I'm turning 40, and you know, I've lived so long. And then I realize, I'm like, if I stay healthy, I've got realistically another 35, 40 years to live. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a daunting thought, like, oh my God, that's everything I've done so far. But again, like another 30, 40 years is insane. So there is a lot of life to live. I believe in that theory of every certain amount of years, you become a new person. Mm. I don't recognize myself at all from old videos, old pictures of that time period when I was, you know, criminal mentality. Yeah. I don't recognize myself at all. So I think that even 7 years from now, I'm going to be a different person. And it's kind of exciting to look forward to that.
Hell yeah. Yeah. If you're paying attention, if you're actively involved in the process of evolution and maturing and growing, then yeah. I mean, I would, even if I met like the guy who I was last year, I'd be like, who's this dude? Do you know what I mean? Like the last year, especially, I feel like I've, you know, become five different people in that time. And that's not out of like me being a chameleon or insincere or, do you know, in fluctuating. It's just when life gets intense, your growth, you have to catch up, don't you, with the pace of it. And so you start evolving at a quicker rate. And I do find, yeah, because I've been doing podcasts now for coming up on 5 years. When you have hour long or more, sometimes in-depth, insanely engaging conversations like this on a regular basis, you know, your mind is moving and developing at a very fast rate. That's the same as if you read a lot of books, if you travel a lot, all this experience is going into your brain and it's just growing and, you know, it's absorbing all of this new information and perspective and wisdom and everything. And you just, you know, you're like a shapeshifter. If you want to be, if you're actively engaged in that approach to life.
Absolutely.
And podcasting is just the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like anybody out there, if they enjoy conversation and they want to learn more about themselves and, you know, their relationship with the world around them, I just say get a mic, get an idea and get to work, because doing my show and by extension this show has changed my life forever for the better. Podcasting rules.
Yeah, it's that idea of when I tell people that have spent their entire lives living in one town, they've never traveled anywhere.
Same thing, yep.
It's kind of the same idea. Like you need to have conversations with other people so you can get perspective on your own life.
Yeah. Right. Right. And not having all of the answers is okay. And I feel like having these conversations continues to help you, you know, gain perspective and humility. Really. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot of humility through doing this podcast. And yeah, I would say that it's changed my life forever as well. And, you know, it's like with anything, when you practice it, you get better at it. And I think the way that I'm getting better at doing this type of thing is becoming a better listener, which has been huge, not just with this as, you know, sort of a career, but in my personal life, being a lot more compassionate and present to moments, you know, where that's a big thing I think we have in society as a problem, is being present, not worrying about picking up your phone every 2 seconds, really being in the moment and listening and taking people in. And, you know, when you do that, something happens to your brain. You know, I think that listening is such a underrated thing. Humanity needs a lot more of that, because when you listen, you find more compassion, you find more tolerance for people and humility. And it's been quite a trip. So I look forward. Let's you mentioned it a long time ago, and I'm terrible at keeping up with stuff, but yeah, have me back on your podcast. Let's revisit this, because it's been a long time since we've had that talk. Well, how long ago was that even? I don't even remember, man.
That was one of the first, you know, that's one of the things I got to be appreciative of the podcast as well, just the level of guests that I had in the very beginning. I mean, my first episode was Adam D. And then you came along. Actually, I'm going to do a little shameless plug. It was because of this. It was because
about
the Kill Switch beer. So he
is
he
that was, unopened?
This is unopened.
Wow.
Probably tastes awful, but no. But that was the birth of the podcast. Was me meeting Adam at the brewery, and like approaching him, like, "Hey, I love your music," and he's like, "I love your beer," and like, "Let's make a beer." And then once that beer was made, I'm like, "Maybe we should talk about it and like start a podcast." And it was just Adam, myself, and the brewer talking about it, and it just kind of exploded from there. But you and I think, yeah, it was within the first year, so it had to have been three years ago or so. since we last talked.
How has that journey been since starting the podcast?
It's been so insane, man. It's an insane, like, my life has purpose. Like I, like we've said, like, I feel that sharing this to the world, it's giving me something to give the world, aside from the music I've done, which, you know, it's a small band, you know, a shout out to Dissever, you know, amazing 10 years in my life with those guys. But, this has a bigger purpose, and being able to meet some of the people that I admire, make new friends and listen to them. Like it's really changed everything in my life. It's become my whole life now, to the point where in the mornings I'm writing notes and I'm trying to come up with new ideas for the show. And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe if I start a different show, maybe I'll start a show with my wife, you know, like it kind of just starts expanding, and it's been a tremendous journey and getting better at it. Like you said, the more you do it, the better you get at it. Cause I'll listen to that first episode with Adam was awful for me. I had no idea what I was doing.
You gotta start somewhere, man. You gotta start somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it's been a tremendous, tremendous experience. And I think it is the future of entertainment as more and more people get into it. Not that it isn't already this big thing. You look at Joe Rogan's podcast is the biggest thing in the world to the point where it's affecting, you know, politics and whatnot. So it has a tremendous amount of power that you need to be in control of and not let it overcome, because there's also that troll mentality a lot of people in this world are doing, where just trolling each other, trying to clickbaity, like, let's have a podcast, but I'm just trying to pull things out of you, like, you know, tell me more hot juicy takes. And it's like, that's not what it's about. That's TMZ. Like, mm-hmm. Have a conversation with someone and listen to them. For sure.
We'll link up the Instagram handle to your show in the show description for this. Dude, thank you so much. Just as I said earlier on, the idea of these things that we go through never really leave us, but it's just turning it into something positive. To hear from, you know, where you started to where you are now is an insanely inspiring story, man. So thank you for coming on and sharing it.
Thank you for letting me do it. Thank you for bringing me on. There's a lot more. There's so much more. We could have 5 podcasts about the little intricacies of how much more damage was done in the beginning and how much better my life is now. But ultimately, that is the thing. Like, you're never going to get rid of that. So just work around it and turn it into the positive. If you have that. Now, some people don't have that, but
may I make a suggestion to you? Sure. If you're willing to do this, perhaps you have a podcast, your own podcast, where you do open up about that. Have you done that before? Have you had a show where you don't have a guest, it's just you talking? I challenge you to do that. Go ahead. Do it. If you got more to say, take notes, like you're saying, take the notes, put it out. Tell your story on your own podcast. Why not? Yeah, you're the boss. Just a suggestion.
I'll take it. I'll take it. I trust your judgment, so I'll try and do it for sure. But thank you so much, man, for letting me come on and talk to you guys. And obviously, it's a tremendous honor to even have this time. So I appreciate it. And Matt, I also want to have you on the show. So, you know, we'll do 2 episodes. I'll do one with Jesse and one with you, man.
We'd love to, mate. We'd love to. We've got each other's emails. So, yeah, let's make that happen.
For sure.
Eddie, love and respect, my friend. Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Man.
Fire stoked. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.